I'm Bruno Combi, president of EFN, Environmentalist for Nuclear Energy, which is an international not-for-profit organization gathering over 10,000 members and supporters in 60 countries.
EFN is an organization that promotes nuclear power. Can you tell the listeners why nuclear power is good? Why, in your point of view, you are in favor of this?
Nuclear power is good because it solves many problems that humanity has to face today. First of all, it's good for the environment. Global warming, we're warming up the planet. It's not very reasonable. We're changing the composition of the atmosphere and of the air that we are breathing. This has never happened ever before. We're doing this in very few decades. And nuclear power is the solution to provide the power that our modern world and civilization needs without polluting the atmosphere and warming up the planet. Then the second problem is about the survival of our civilization with the end of oil. Today, we are very highly dependent on our oil consumption. In very few decades, this will die away, and we need another solution. Otherwise, our civilization will simply crash. And again, nuclear power is the solution because it's the only major source of energy which is available to replace oil and gas when it starts not being available anymore.
Can you address the major concerns which have to do with radiation and nuclear waste?
Yes, of course. What makes nuclear energy so different and so fantastic is what I call the factor 1 million. 1 gram of uranium produces as much energy as 1 ton of oil. Now, 1 gram to 1 ton is a factor 1 million. So that's something. Imagine what is a million. A million times more. This means that to produce the same service to the population, you will hardly take any matter from the Earth. This means that the scar that we are inflicting to our planet in order to use some energy is a million times smaller, which means almost insignificant. We require very little uranium to power nuclear reactors. It's just a small carload or truckload per year for a giant energy-producing plant of 1,000 megawatts. So it's a very small amount. So it does not damage the planet by the material we're taking from the inside of the Earth. And similarly, when it comes to waste, the waste is only whatever fuel you had taken in the beginning, which has transformed and turns into waste. So when you take a million times less uranium or mineral from the Earth, then you also produce a million times less waste by the quantity. So the amounts are very small. Now, the other side of this is that not only the amounts are very small, but because it's a small amount, this waste is not returned into nature. It is confined. It's not like a gas, like the CO2 when you burn oil and gas, which is thrown out the garbage can. It's just the atmosphere. When it's nuclear power, the burnt uranium, the used nuclear fuel, is confined. It's not put back into the ecosystems. Therefore, it has absolutely no environmental impact because it's not put back into the ecosystems. And above all, another major difference is that many of the standard chemical waste will last forever because they are stable chemical elements. But nuclear waste, by definition, is radioactive, which means it disintegrates with time and disappears, which is a very great benefit of nuclear waste. It does not last forever. So how long it lasts, of course, depends on each chemical element. Some of them have very short half-lives, which means they disappear very rapidly. Therefore, they're not a problem. All you have to do is isolate them from the environment for a very short time. Other elements have a very long half-life. Typically, for example, uranium-235 is 750 million years. That's a very long time. And uranium-238 would be something like several billion years. Or plutonium-239 is about a little bit over 20,000 years. So these are long spans of time. But what happens when you have those long half-lives is that these elements are very hardly radioactive, in fact. When they last for a long time, it's because they burn very, very slowly. So they are very slow emitters. For example, uranium, which lasts hundreds of millions or billions of years, is almost a stable element, which means it hardly produces any radiation at all. And in fact, in those plants where the nuclear fuel is fabricated, there are no special rules which are taken to protect yourself from radiation from uranium, because unburnt uranium is not very radioactive. You can sleep with a huge amount of uranium under your pillow, and it's not dangerous. However, the used nuclear fuel, when it comes out of the reactor, is then much more radioactive because it contains other elements with a much shorter half-life. But those elements which have a very long half-life are not dangerous because they're hardly radioactive, and those who have a very short half-life are not dangerous because they don't last for very long. So we can see that in all cases, it's not that dangerous, and it does not last forever. That's about nuclear waste. Another important thing about nuclear waste is that it can easily be reprocessed, as is the case, for example, in my country, in France, where you have the La Hague reprocessing plant in operation since several decades. When you take the nuclear fuel out from the reactor, it's hardly burnt at all. You burn only a few percent of the fuel, and then 97% is left unburned. So what you do when you reprocess the fuel is separate the unburnt uranium, and then you can use it again. And you're left with only a few percent, about 3% of the volume, which is already very small, which is what you call ultimate waste, and needs to be stored in a safe manner. So used nuclear fuel is small amounts. It's confined. It's not rejected into the environment. It's reprocessed in a clean manner. So it's highly ecological. It's environmentally friendly.
Is there a safe way to store the material that does need to be stored? And what are the effects of the radiation on human life? Because what you're saying is so different from what we've heard for so long about radiation being dangerous. I wonder if you could expand upon those two points.
Okay, so about the health effects of radiation, it all depends on the amount of radiation you're exposed to. Of course, the very high amounts of radiation, like you might find inside a nuclear reactor or in a Hiroshima on the day of the explosion, these are highly dangerous amounts of radiation, and they can be deadly depending on the dose. However, it's very difficult to be exposed to such high level of radiation because Hiroshima, fortunately, seldom happens, and because no one lives inside a nuclear reactor. In fact, it's very easy to protect yourself from radiation, and it just takes a screen. For example, a simple piece of paper will stop the alpha radiation, a simple sheet of aluminum foil will stop the beta radiation, and the most penetrating are the gamma radiation, which will be stopped by something like a few feet of concrete or steel. So it's very easy to protect yourself from radiation. And that's the reason why in the Western world, no one has ever been exposed to dangerous levels of radiation in the exploitation of civilian uses of nuclear power. Not talking about Chernobyl, of course, which was the worst accident you can imagine.
Yes, I've seen lots of photographs from the area around Chernobyl over the ensuing decades, and it's quite amazing to see the photographs of people and children who were affected at the time, and then to look at how nature has taken over the quarantined area and turned it back into wilderness.
Absolutely. Even in the worst-case scenario like Chernobyl, the damage is not forever. It's only local in the area close to Chernobyl, and it's local in time, only for a certain number of years or decades. And over time, nature always comes back and fixes everything. Now, the other interesting thing about radiation is that, in fact, it's natural. It's always existed in nature. Man has not invented radiation, and we have not even invented the nuclear reactions. They've been going on in nature since the dawn of times. Everything in nature is radioactive. The earth, the rocks, our houses, the human body, and this was the case even before the beginning of the nuclear industry, of course. It's always been like that in nature. The sun sends us solar radiation. We have cosmic radiation coming from the skies, and the terrestrial radiation coming from the inside of the earth. It's always been like that. And in fact, natural doses of radiation, those which you can find in nature, are not only not dangerous, but in fact, they're beneficial for our health. They're absolutely necessary. When you grow mice or rats in an environment with no radiation at all, which in fact is very difficult to do because radiation is everywhere, they die. Radiation is necessary for life, a certain amount of radiation. However, of course, the very big amounts of radiation, like Hiroshima, as I mentioned, can be deadly. So we have to protect from those very high doses, which is easy because it just takes a simple screen or distance from the source of the intensive radiation. So, of course, radio protection inside the nuclear power plants is important, and the protection especially for the workers. But it's not a very difficult thing to do because it's based on very simple physical principles, like having a screen or a certain distance between where the radiation is and where you are.
Another question that I hear spoken about is the fact that spent nuclear fuel can be used to make weapons. And this is a concern both from the point of view of non-proliferation of nuclear weapons in general and contemporary political situation involving what we call terrorism.
Yes, of course, this is a very serious subject, and we have to be very careful about nuclear non-proliferation. However, the answer to your question is yes and no at the same time. It's true and false that used nuclear fuel can be used to make atomic bombs. It all depends on what used nuclear fuel. If you take the fuel from standard reactors in operation today in the United States or in Europe, like in France, it's pressurized water reactors. Well, the used nuclear fuel from those reactors cannot turn into dangerous bombs. It's just burnt uranium. And the plutonium which appears inside is not of military quality. You cannot turn it into a powerful bomb like Hiroshima or Nagasaki. It doesn't work. To make nuclear bombs, you need other types of reactors. So those are the types of reactors that we should be careful about and not see proliferate. For example, the CANDU reactors or some of the graphite reactors. In general, the reactors which can be reloaded while in operation without stopping the reactors. Those are the reactors we must be very careful about because they can lead to the fabrication of very high military-grade plutonium, which is the dangerous substance. But with the water-pressurized reactors that we have today in operation that we're building today in Europe and the United States, there's no chance of building an atomic bomb. You can't do it. However, we have to be careful about not building the bombs at other levels, have nothing to do with the existence or not of nuclear reactors. In fact, even in countries without any reactors at all, you can build the bombs, for example, with the centrifuge technology without having any nuclear industry at all. It's not nuclear industry. It's about mastering the centrifuge technology. So there are two different subjects, which are, should we develop civilian nuclear reactors, like water reactors? And the answer is yes, because it's very useful to provide the power that we need, and it's not damaging to the environment, and the solution to both climate change and the end of oil. In fact, it's the key to the very survival of our civilization in a few decades. And then there's a different question, which is to be careful about the centrifuge technology and the military application, but it's a totally different subject.
I'm curious what your thoughts are, your responses are to people who are strongly opposed to nuclear power, who have reasons that to them are as good as your reasons are for being in favor of it.
Well, there's a good question that you can ask yourself is why don't you like nuclear power? And the answer is usually, I'm afraid. Then if you start thinking about that, you will notice that when someone starts talking to you and makes you afraid about something, usually he's trying to get you somewhere. It's very easy to manipulate people by making them scared or afraid. Nuclear power is not a scary thing. In fact, it's a solution. And if you start looking at it from this other side, what could we do with nuclear power? You will see that it's a great chance for humanity. We're very lucky that we do have nuclear power available, because if we didn't, our civilization would crash in little time without any other viable solution. Of course, as an environmentalist, I myself am very greatly in favor of renewable energies and energy conservation. But unfortunately, this will not lead us very far, because these are very dilute forms of energy. And in order to gather a substantial amount, you need to multiply huge surfaces of solar cells or thousands and thousands and thousands of huge, giant windmills, which in fact will not even solve the problem, because the energy is not produced at the right place in insufficient amounts, and it is intermittent. Solar energy is provided only when the sun shines, and you need more energy in Europe, for example, in winter when there's so little sun. And wind energy is produced only when the wind blows, and that's about 20% of the time on average. So we need a form of energy that is reliable and powerful enough to ensure that we can continue having a modern lifestyle, that we continue having enough food in our plates, that we continue having the possibility of heating our homes and educating our children. And this will not be provided, unfortunately, by renewable energies. I myself have built an eco house here in the suburbs of Paris. It consumes very little energy, but these things are not enough. You still need a baseload amount of energy with some electricity produced, and unfortunately, solar power is not enough. So we should do whatever amount of renewable energy we can, but it's far from being what's necessary to solve the problem. So we should be careful not to discard what is the only viable solution. Otherwise, we will end up with very difficult times.
I'm curious to know your background and how you arrived at this conclusion.
Yeah, that's a more personal answer, but it's an interesting story. My father was working as an oil geologist. His job was to say where you have to drill the holes to find the oil. As a result of my father's activity, my first 2 years were in Gabon, in Africa. His job was to get the oil out of the ground in the jungle. Then a few years in the United States, then 7 years in Canada, and I traveled around the planet like that because my father was in the energy business. And when I was very young, 5 or 6 years old, we started having discussions about energy with my father. And he taught me that we are living, since it was in the early 1960s then, that we are living in the world of oil, in the era of oil in history. Oil is powering the world, but that this will not last forever. And he then gave me the dates that he would not see the end of oil, but I would see it. And it seems he was right when you look at the timescales as they are still known today. My father is still alive, and I'm 50. Then I went on to study at university. I became a nuclear engineer. Worked for just 2 years at EDF, Électricité de France, which is the largest nuclear operator in the world. But I resigned from that position because I wanted to serve my fellow citizens as an environmentalist. So I started writing books on lifestyle and how to live a better health. That was in the mid-1980s. Since then, it's been 25 years, a quarter of a century. I make a living as a book author on lifestyle and environmentally friendly ways to change your life. So I wrote the best-selling book in France on how to stop smoking, many books on organic nutrition and how to have better food, books on relaxation, sleep, ultra-rapid napping techniques, and other ways to live a better life. And then by being in contact with my ecologist friends, I noticed that they were having a reflection on nuclear energy, which was totally crazy for me, thinking it was very dangerous, it's only a problem. And with the experience I had about it, it was the exact opposite. So I decided making my next book on nuclear power. The title of the book is Environmentalist for Nuclear Energy, which is also the name of the organization I created. And when the book came out, it had a lot of success in Europe. So I started creating the organization. So that's how I came about dealing with these subjects. I was born in the world of energy with my family and my father, but it was about oil. And very young, had a clear vision that it was not the world of oil we live in will not go on forever, so we needed another solution.
It's fascinating, you know, in the United States, if someone says they're an environmentalist, most people assume that they oppose nuclear power, that these points of view are mutually exclusive, and you are bringing things together in a way that is unusual.
Well, as you say, it's just an assumption, but it's not true. In fact, nuclear power is the cleanest form of energy we have. The best form of energy is an energy that needs, that requires nothing, that consumes nothing and requires no construction material. Unfortunately, there's none. You always require either some form of fuel or some construction material in large quantities. In the case of renewables like solar and wind, you require no fuel, but you require large amounts of construction materials and large surfaces of land to produce just small amounts of energy in an intermittent manner. When you look at the whole picture and how many of these windmills you need, the story becomes very different. For example, if you want to produce as much energy as one nuclear reactor like the EPR, which France is building in Normandy right now, the reactor itself is the size of any standard industrial building. But if you want to replace this by windmills, you need to line up those giant modern windmills, which are twice as high as Notre-Dame de Paris, the cathedral of my country, twice as high as cathedrals. You line them up all the way from Genoa in Italy to Barcelona in Spain, all along the French Mediterranean coast, and all around Corsica, the island of Corsica, just to replace one nuclear reactor, which is the size of a building. So what's the most respectful of the environment? Is it windmills that you have to line up over thousands and thousands of kilometers, or is it a simple nuclear reactor, which is just a few meters in diameter? I think it's nuclear power, even if it requires a carload of uranium per year. You have to take everything into consideration, including the construction material.
Your answers all make me have new questions, which is great.
That's great. It means you're starting to understand things.
Yes. My two questions are, one has to do with, there are two basic paradigms of energy production, which is centralized or decentralized, and then, of course, those can be hybridized. And what you're talking about is a more centralized form of energy production, which is based on the idea that our large population will continue and will continue to need large amounts of energy, which is one vision of humanity, of infinite number of visions. So I wonder if you would talk about, because you did mention renewable energy and that you've built this house, do you see a way to bring together renewable, decentralized energy with this centralized energy?
Yes, of course. But there's a usual assumption that renewable energies are decentralized and that nuclear power is centralized. And it's not that simple, in fact. Because when you look at the facts, all the windmills today are connected to the electric grid, whether it's in Germany, in Denmark, in France, in the United States, or any other place. They're all connected to the American or European electric grid. They're not used as decentralized energy locally at all. And in fact, the power lines in Germany, where there's a lot of windmills in the north, they have to double the high tension lines going to the south of the country just to bring the wind energy when there's a lot of wind on the North Sea. So wind energy is not that decentralized as it's thought to be usually. Same for solar power. There are plans now to make huge solar farms in Africa, for example, and then getting the electricity brought to Europe, or the same in, say, Mexico for the United States. This would not be decentralized at all. It's highly centralized. And when you look at today's world, the oil production, of course, burning oil in your that's in the tank of your car is in a way decentralized, but the production of the oil is totally centralized in the Middle East. So you have to be careful what you're speaking about. Nuclear reactors can be decentralized. For example, in France, we put them in one reactor in each part of the country. You have them in the western part, in the northern part, and the southern part, so they can be placed almost anywhere. So it's rather easy to decentralize the nuclear power plants because they can build anywhere. Then the production of the uranium can also be done anywhere, and it's not as centralized as oil by far. You have uranium everywhere on the planet, 3 grams per ton. For example, if you take your garden and a piece of earth, anywhere in your own garden you have uranium by probably about 3 grams per ton. And in certain areas it can be a lot more. So uranium production can be decentralized, and every country has enough. For example, in France, which is a very small country, We ran our nuclear power plants on French uranium for many decades. Now we are importing most of the uranium. But it's not because we have exhausted the French uranium resources. It's because mines with higher grades of uranium have been discovered, for example, in Australia and Canada or other countries, which are much cheaper to operate than the low-grade uranium which can be found in France. But it can be operated with the uranium from France, the low-grade uranium, as it has been for many decades. It's only that it's cheaper for the moment to bring the uranium from another country, and there's not much dependence in doing so, because there's so many countries where you can find some uranium on one hand, and also because the amount of uranium you need is so small that it's very easy to stockpile enough uranium for dozens of years in advance. Just because it's so small amount, it's just a few truckloads for the entire country for a year. So you can put that very easily. You can have advanced stocks. About the future and how we can fit together renewable energies and nuclear power to ensure the future of humanity, there are things that can and should be done. For example, eco-construction is the way to go. You can build homes that are much, much more energy efficient than today's houses. The home I have in Paris requires about 20 times less energy than a standard home in France. And because this energy is entirely either renewable or nuclear in France, it does not put any carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. In France, the electricity is 80% nuclear and 15% renewable. And only 5% is made from carbon fuels.
Is there anything you would like to add, anything you want to make sure the listeners hear?
What we should absolutely be very conscious about is that we should be very careful that we are lucky today to enjoy a civilization where we have enough energy to feed ourselves. We have enough energy to run our cars. We have enough energy to have warm homes. And this has not always been the case. In fact, it's a rather short length of time since it is the case. Our grandparents didn't have that, or not all, at least our grandparents had it. And it might not last forever, especially if we don't make the right choices right now for our energy future. Oil will be running out. Gas will be running out shortly after oil. And our world is entirely dependent on these energy, not to speak about global warming, which is also induced by coal. And oil, gas, and coal today provide about 90% of the energy in the world. So our civilization is in simple danger of disappearing if we don't find a solution that works. And renewable energies and energy conservation are to be encouraged, but unfortunately they will not suffice and they will not solve the problem. So we need another source of energy which is massively available, and available upon demand, a reliable source of energy. When you look at everything that's at hand today, there's only one that works, and that is sustainable for a sufficient amount of time, and it's called nuclear power. So let us grab this chance and seize it. If we wait, and that might be the last thing I would like to draw your attention to, if we wait until oil runs out to start thinking about building the nuclear reactors, it's too late. Our civilization dies. The reason for this is that it takes about 25 years to build industrial infrastructures in whatever area it might be. For example, when France went into its nuclear program after the first oil shock in 1973, the decision to build the French nuclear program was taken suddenly with the oil crisis, 1973. But the last nuclear reactor of that program was put online in 1999. That's 26 years later. So it took 26 years, and that's the time it would take for any other nuclear program in another country in the world. And in fact, if you want to have a giant windmill program, it will take probably even longer. And if you want to build big national infrastructures to import gas, for example, from Alaska to the central part of the United States, it also takes 25 years. That's the time it took to build the Alaska pipeline. So any major industrial shift or infrastructure takes a long time because you have to train the engineers, build the factories, then build the material, then operate it, test it, and so on. It takes about a quarter of a century. And if we wait for oil to run short, before we take the decision of building the nuclear reactors, we're in a dangerous situation. And what's happening right now is like we're all citizens aboard a bus. The bus is driving full speed, and it's going to fall off a cliff. And we're all sitting there in the bus, singing and having fun, not seeing that the bus is going to fall off the cliff. And maybe it's already too late to change things. Or at least we should start changing before it's too late. Because if you wait until the bus is off the cliff, it's not time to change anymore. Just say a prayer and it's finished.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for your interview.